Log Talk Radio.
Yeah, this is Big Dog Hunt. Callous Remarks with Joe Stasak and Steve Callous once again. On your Tuesday evening, 5:30, Steve Callous will be joining us shortly. We're going to talk heavy NCAA tournament today. And then there were four, Gonzaga taking on South Carolina, and, of course, North Carolina taking on Oregon. And without further ado, here he is, my man, doing bad, talking sports, as always, the finest in the business. Hello, Steve Callous.
Great to be with you, Joe, as always. Looking forward to this show.
Yes, sir, you are, and I am too as well. It's down to four, my friend, and we're going to talk heavy tonight on NCAA hoops. And some things have changed. Obviously, some brackets have been busted. One of surprise teams, South Carolina, in the mix. Let's start with the East versus the West. We have South Carolina and Gonzaga. South Carolina, 7 seed, kind of coming out of nowhere. They knocked off Marquette. They knocked off Duke, which was impressive. Baylor was a 3 seed. Florida was a 4 seed. The only other high-ranking team was Villanova. We know what happened to them. They averaged beating their teams by an average of 12.5 points a game, and they play defense. And, of course, they go against Gonzaga, the number one seed overall. They've only lost one game all year to BYU. They've knocked off South Dakota State, Northwestern, West Virginia, and Xavier, an 11 seed. Not as impressive of a resume, Steve, but we all know you just have to beat the teams that you're up against, and they've done that. Your thoughts on the East versus the West?
Well, this Sedarius Thornwell is a heck of a player. I mean,
big time.
So you put in the great defense. And again, I analogize them a bit to West Virginia. I thought West Virginia could beat Gonzaga, and of course that was a good game. But
good game.
I think South Carolina, I'm not a believer in Gonzaga. I wasn't a believer in Kansas. I wasn't a believer in UNC. I hope we do a lot on that Kentucky game because I have a lot to say
about
that game. But now that the ones are there and they've made it through, I mean, Gonzaga's got the big guy, Karnowski, and they have the star freshman big guy behind him. They got a very good team. I think they're going to find a way. But I give I'm not going to say I'm a Frank Martin fan. I think he's actually toned down a little bit. I saw a thing a softball thing on him and his family, and he's the nicest dad in the world and blah, 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 and you wouldn't know him. He's the nicest husband on earth. He used to be a lunatic. My son, who didn't know a lot about him, I said, just Google the guy, and you probably know the things he's done in the past. But he seems to have tamed that down a little bit, and these kids play defense. And it's unlike the only other team in the tournament I could come up with similar to them is West Virginia. And, of course, Huggins is their coach. So I'm not saying those guys coach wrong, but they coach nutty, and maybe they've calmed down a bit. But I think they meet their end. I hate picking favorites, but I think at this point Gonzaga – I mean, I like their big guy a lot, and I didn't think he was that good, but he is, and he can shoot with either hand close to the basket, big seven-footer. So much as I'd like to pick South Carolina, I'm going to pick Gonzaga. But again, if they have a guy like Thornwell and they can defend the way they can defend, certainly they have a chance to win.
I agree with you. I'm going to go against you, though. I had Gonzaga going all the way. I believe I've reserved the right to change my opinion, not that that does anything, but I like what Gonzaga's done all year. I like their resume, their body of work, and all that. South Carolina, to me, is one of those teams, and I don't care they won 3 of 6 down the stretch and they struggled a little bit. It matters how hot they are now. They are very hot, and I love the way they play defense. You held Baylor to 50 points, beat them by 20, knocked off a good Marquette team, although a 10 seed. They were one of the three teams to beat Villanova this year by 20. Strong against Duke, outlasted them, 7-point win in Florida. Florida was a good squad. They held them to 31% shooting from the field. Florida missed 14 three-pointers in the second half. I'm going with SC. I like the way they played. Their resume has them knocking off a 2-3 and a 4 seed and a decent Marquette team. They seem to be one of those teams on a roll. Although I do like what Gonzaga has done, would not be surprised if Gonzaga moves on, but I'm going with SC. I like SC to get to the title game. And
I'll tell you, the Florida game was interesting to me against South Carolina because they went 7-for-12 in the first half, and you talk about live by the three, die by the three. As you said, they were 0-for-14 in the second half, and obviously that's the difference in a game that was very close until the very end. But I understand that is a function to some degree of South Carolina's defense, but it also is a function of Florida just going ice cold in the second half, because it's hard to believe you can go 7-for-12 in one half and 0-for-14 in the other. Yes, it's good defense, but you know the old saying, live by the three, die by the three.
Yep.
And I think in this particular game, from 7-to-12 to 7-for-26, I think that's what did in Florida. But again, all credit, I won't be upset at all if South Carolina wins. I just think these two number ones, and again, I didn't pick either of them to get to the Final Four. I'm loath to pick number ones, but I think at this point they have a little more class, and I think they'll be able to get over the hump. And they already, again, have had a similar kind of game with West Virginia, and I think that's going to stand them in good stead when they play on Saturday.
Yeah, interesting. Callous remarks with Joe Stazak and Steve Callous. I like the underdog stories, and it's not that I'm going with my heart. I think I'm just going with my head there. A 7 seed, I think the lowest seed to ever win a tournament was Villanova. They were an 8 seed out of the Southeast Conference back way back in 1985. There wasn't even a three-pointer or a shot clock back then. But, listen, they've captured my heart, but I'm thinking with my head here, believe it or not. Either way, it's going to be interesting for one of them to advance, South Carolina to advance, or Gonzaga. The Gonzaga's always been a team that's hanging around, can never get over the hump. I'd be actually happy for either team. Both teams average their average wins in the tournament, 12.5. South Carolina's a little hamstrung offensively, but again, I like teams that play defense. If you want to go back to 1985, Nova played great defense. They were, the ball, they didn't miss either. That helps. But they were a defensive team, and last year's Villanova team as well.
Well, if I could, Joe, I would like to go back to 85, because I still don't think that was the greatest upset that to this day everybody talks about for this reason. And I guess you remember the season, and you're a Villanova guy. In 85, they played Georgetown twice. They got beaten overtime once.
Overtime.
I think in the other game they lost by like six. So I think it was more they played almost the perfect game than this was such a shocking upset, because they had already seen them twice during the year, and they had played them tough, including, again, going to overtime once. So I never viewed that as a shocking upset. I viewed that as, if you want to show somebody playing a perfect college basketball game, put that tape in, because that was the one where they were almost perfect.
No, I agree. They shot 78.6% from the field or something like that. They missed one shot in the second half. I think what it was Georgetown, they were the incumbent national champions. They had been to the title game a couple years before when Jordan hit that shot. Patrick Ewing was a senior. You know, they had Michael Jackson, David Wingate, Broadnax, Billy Martin. They had a very, very good team, had a very, very good year. They smoked St. John's in the semifinal game. Everyone thought that was the title game. I love that. And then Nova played Memphis State with Andre Turner, William Bedford, and Baskerville Holmes, that crew. And, again, eked it out. But they were holding teams to 50 points or less in that tournament until Georgetown. And I think that Georgetown was viewed as – in fact, USA Today had Villanova versus a god. And I think that what you said is a salient point. And a lot of the players said that. We were not afraid of Georgetown. We played them twice this year. We were very familiar with them. And I think St. John's was a team who couldn't beat Georgetown necessarily straight up. But, Villanova, they slowed it down, didn't have the shot clock, and they didn't miss. That helps.
Right.
That helps, certainly.
Right. I just wanted to say one more thing, if I could, about the Florida-South Carolina game. Because there are a few things, some of these refs' calls are missed calls, and you don't want to harp on them, but some of these things happened in the last few days on what I thought were key parts of the game. So I even wrote down at 72-68, or at 70-68, South Carolina threw a bomb, you'll recall, to Notice, Dwayne Notice, who caught underneath the basket, and he didn't take three steps, he took four.
He took like five.
And there was no walk called, and thankfully it dawned on the announcers when they finally saw the replay, but if you watched it in real time, the guy, if it was on the schoolyard, you would have broke down laughing, because the guy didn't take two or three steps, he took four, maybe you're right, maybe five, and that lack of a call... I'm not going to say again, you can't say it'll turn the game around, but it allowed the lead to go from 2-4. And so, I don't know, I just want to point those things out, because I think I don't know if there should be replay per se on those kinds of calls. You know, it's the older judgment calls, I guess. But that was such an obvious walk. And I know they're going to say, oh, everybody walks in the NBA, and maybe they let them get away with it. But this was an unusual play. It was the long bomb. And, again, all credit to Notice for catching the ball. But there's a price that comes when you catch a ball that's thrown like that. And it was like he was
yes.
a receiver with outstretched hands. And, again,
yes.
he took 3, 4, maybe 5 steps. It was a clear walk. And they did
clear
see
walk.
It on the replay. But, you know, that doesn't help anybody.
My heart was in my throat on that play because I saw as soon as he released it, I'm like, that is too long.
Too far,
that's
right.
That's going out of bounds. The kid made a nice play, and it's hard to dribble when you're trying to stay in bounds and catch the ball at the same time. So I get what he was doing. But I was hanging out with some friends. That's a walk. How did they not call
right.
it? I was rooting for South Carolina, too.
Right.
But they eked it out. They did start. They missed a few free throws down the stretch, but they eked it out. And, you know, I'm happy to see Frank Martin and the crew in the Final Four. You know, the fresh fish, Gonzaga getting there is also an interesting storyline. And then we move over to the Midwest versus the South. Let's start with the Oregon region. Obviously, they're missing Chris Boucher with that knee injury. Hasn't hurt them so far, but could hurt them as the games get a little tighter. They beat Iona. They beat the Gales, my squad. They beat Rhode Island. They beat Michigan. They eked that one out. And, of course, and this is no surprise to you or I, you know, they knocked off Kansas, who it looks great until they get in a tough situation. I don't know how Bill Self got himself in the Hall of Fame, but God bless him if he can get it done. They beat Kansas by 14. Josh Jackson, not a great game. I like what Oregon's doing. I think they're hot. They've averaged beating teams only by 8.5 points a game. That Michigan game brought them down a little bit. They beat a 14 seed, 11 seed, a 7 seed, and, of course, they knocked off Kansas. Strong showing so far from Oregon. I thought that game against Kansas for a while was just a bomb fest in the first half. You know, it was entertaining because both teams were knocking down shots. And then I know you want to talk about this a lot, and how can we not? North Carolina versus Kentucky. And Carolina had a pretty, pretty easy road to get there. They beat Texas Southern. They beat Arkansas, Butler, 16-8 and 4 seeds respectively. And then they played Kentucky, a young team but fast, quick, as a hiccup. And, you know, it took a ridiculous shot by the white guy and knocking it down late. And they get it done, and they move on. And, you know, the 20th time in their history, their esteemed history, that they're going to the Final Four. And I had them going all the way. I may opt to change that, but they look the strongest so far. They're big. They're big inside. They outscored Kentucky 34-26 in the paint. No surprise there. But I think there's a way to mitigate that, as Nova did last year. Villanova, a small team, actually outscored them in the paint in that title game. They played ball pressure, and they had Daniel Ashefu, which is their biggest problem this year. He graduated. They didn't have a big man to minimize some of the things that Nigel Hayes was doing against them from Wisconsin. But anyway, your thoughts, Oregon versus Carolina.
Well, I want to take a step back on North Carolina, Kentucky, and talk briefly about Kentucky-UCLA. And I understand that was obviously a Sweet 16 game to go to the Elite Eight. But we did talk about Kentucky and the road. You talk about everybody's road, but Kentucky had to go through Wichita State, who was a 10, which was a joke. And then they had to go through UCLA. And we found out in 5 minutes that Lonzo Ball is going to be a good pro because he can't defend.
Right.
And with all the hype about this guy, to see what DeAndre Fox did to him the first 5 minutes,
yeah.
You know, they took him off. He took him 4 times and scored 4 times. They took Ball off him for a while. He came back
yep.
and forth,
yep.
but there's some fascinating things in that game. But all I wanted to say is Lonzo Ball was the freshman of the year. He was the third best freshman on the court that day because Monk and Fox both played better than he did on that day. Having said that,
yep.
Ball is 6'6". He's an incredible passer. I mean, the passes he made in that game are passes that nobody else makes. I mean, it's Jason Kidd-like, I don't know about Magic-like, but he sees things that other people don't say, and he has some touch on his passes. Having said
yep.
that, how does he project? He projects as a good pro because he's a 6'6 point guard, but he has no chance to guard all these fast point guards in the NBA. He
right.
hopefully, for
yep.
his sake, winds up on a team where he can go guard a 2 because he's 6'6, and they have an athletic 2 enough who can guard a point guard. Otherwise, these guys are going to be running all around him the way that Fox did. Now, again, the answer to all that might be, it's the NBA. Who really plays defense. But I was fascinated by that game. But then to go, again, to Kentucky, North Carolina, and I like Kentucky to go to the final game, as you know, and I thought they would be toughened by Wichita State and UCLA, and they were. But the problem with Fox, you know, I'd love to see, I know this won't happen, but in the old days, in the old days of 20 years ago, we used to talk about, does that guy need another year? Could he use another year? And
right.
I think as good as Fox and Monk are, I think they could both use another year. Monk, whatever you think of him. Now, he had 47 against North Carolina, but that Theo Pinson didn't play, and he's a good defender. He's North Carolina's best perimeter defender. But I was shocked that Monk did not even – he hardly got the ball. I don't think he took a shot the first 4 minutes of the game. And if you have a guy who lit up a team for 47, you know they're going to cheat to him, but you want to get him involved. But the problem with Monk, as we saw in this tournament, is he's a streak shooter. He gets incredible lift on
sure,
his jumper.
Sure.
He hit those two threes at the end that were out of this world. But
out
he's a streak shooter, so I don't know where he projects in the NBA. Is he going to be a two guard? And then Fox, as good as he is, he's a slight kid. He's 6'3". He's got springs. But he's a slight, very quick. But he's a very slight kid, and he can't even shoot college threes. He made a couple in that game, but he can't even shoot college threes consistently. So I... And again, you know, this is totally going to fall on deaf ears. But how good would those two guys be if they took another year in college, one guy to bulk up a little, the other guy to become more consistent? Because I think they're going to have their troubles at the next level. Whereas Ball at 6'6", I think he's got – and a great passer. I think he's got a better chance – although, again, he was the third-best freshman in that UCLA-Kentucky game. So I thought Kentucky could win. I was most disappointed, and I'll just go to one play in this game as well. Very late in the game, they had that play. I don't remember how many seconds there were, but there was that play where they threw the long pass to Jackson. You know, they were pressing. They hit threes. They threw the bomb to Jackson, and he caught it. Monk was running after him. Fox, to my great disappointment, you could see it on the replay. Nobody talked about it, as usual. But Fox was jogging back. And what Monk was able to do was he was able to make Jackson stop. So while Bill Raftery is going, oh, look at that great footwork by Jackson, and while Grant Hill is going, oh, he was able to collect himself, I was like, well, Monk made him stop, collect himself, and lay it in, and if Fox was sprinting, I think he could have got there. The alternative for Monk would have been to foul him, because why are you going to give the guy an open layup at that point?
Sure.
That was stupid.
Sure.
So either hammer him, or if Fox was sprinting, I think, and again, nobody talked about that. I love Fox. I mean, he's, you know, you're rooting for him. Not a
tremendous
big guy. You know, 6'2", 6'3", can jump, but, you know, a slight kid. He's got to grow
yep.
physically. But my goodness, the fact that you weren't sprinting back and you were the only guy who could help and would have had a chance to help. Of course, Fox assumed, like most people would, that Jackson was going to lay it in or dunk it. And Jackson
yep.
stopped, collected himself. You know, everybody was complimenting the guy for making an obvious basketball play, but he should have been fouled, and maybe Fox could have got there in time, or maybe Monk should have fouled him, and they didn't foul, and I thought that was a huge play. And on the final play, it was just such a bang bang thing. What I don't like, and again, Calipari, oh, they got the ball in so fast I couldn't get anyone to call time. So I did watch the game again after that with that in mind. At 46 seconds left, there was a timeout. At like 16 seconds left, there was a timeout. You telling me when you're down 3 or 4 at that point, not 7 or 8, you're telling me in the huddle you're not going to say to your team, hey, look, if we tie it up, call timeout?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying it would have been any different. You know, Roy Williams says, oh, yeah, if it's over 6 seconds, we go, and it was 7.2. So I don't know
yep.
if I buy the 1 second differential, if it was 5.8, he would have called time. I don't know about
that,
but that's the way it shook out. This guy, May, was great before he hit that shot. I mean,
great.
I thought he was fantastic. He's got 33 points in the last two games. And after the game, Roy Williams said, yeah, and I wanted him to come in as a walk-on. I didn't want to give him a scholarship. How smart am I? Well, you can say that after you win the game. That's good for you.
Right.
But I was so disappointed. I thought Kentucky would really – and, again, I don't like the – you know, and then Jay Williams on ESPN, well, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback and say they could have called time, but they really didn't have any time. But hold it now. So I went back and looked at that. There were three timeouts in the last minute.
Yeah.
So if you have three timeouts in the last minute, including one with like 16 seconds left, North Carolina call time, so why don't you in the huddle say, you know, this goes back to Chris Webber calling timeout in that championship game where Fisher wouldn't let himself get buried instead of standing up for his play. Oh, we told him we had no timeouts left.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And you really would like to know, because when they do Wired in the NBA, they do that Wired where you hear the coaches. You never hear them talk strategy. Ooh, play hard. Let's rebound. Let's go hard. You never hear them because they're not gonna play those for us. But the notion that it's rah-rah in the huddle, this is where you tell the guy we have no timeouts left. This is where you tell the guy if we tie up the game, call time. So I was pretty disappointed. Again, look, as you know, I was rooting for Kentucky all the way. But I thought they could have won the game. I thought they should have won the game. They wound up making an unbelievable comeback. And the final thing I'll say in that game, when May hit that shot, this is another thing I stopped. I went back and looked. When May hit the shot, it said 0.3 seconds left. Now, you know, on every big shot in every big game that is a shot like that, what happens? The refs go over and they look at the time.
Yeah,
and if
there was
you
a little
stop
more, I thought
that,
there was a little bit more time left.
Yeah, if you stop that when the ball goes in the net at 0.6, through the net 0.5, again, would that have made a difference? Unlikely. But you get the point. These things are national games of incredible importance. And we have a guy in one game take four steps, maybe five, no call. And yes, refs miss calls, but I don't know that they miss four-step walks. So you have that, and then you have this where, again, if they had 0.5 or 0.6, were they going to win? Unlikely. But that's a lot more time. And so I just find these things interesting because these are the games that everybody focuses on. And even the people who are focusing, nobody said on the TV, nobody said, well, maybe they should check the clock. I've never seen them not check the clock, Joe, in that kind
of situation.
I
thought there was no way they couldn't check the clock.
Right, but
in
apparently
fact,
I'll tell you this. They didn't check it and say 0.3 because I stopped it, and it was either 0.6 or 0.5. And that's now. This is from a guy again who was rooting for Kentucky because I love Monk, and I love Fox even more. But I wish those guys would stay an extra year. And when we're talking a year or two or three from now, it'll be interesting to see if these guys are hurt because they'll be high draft picks who, in my opinion, for different reasons, aren't quite ready.
Well, it's one and done. You know, the squad
mm-hmm.
down in Kentucky
mm-hmm.
for John Calipari. I think his graduation
mm-hmm.
rate is like zero because no one gets to be a senior down there. But we'll get to a little more of a Kentucky story down the road. But I want to get your thoughts first of all on the matchup with Oregon and North Carolina.
Yeah, Oregon's been great. Dylan Brooks and Dorsey, these guys were great. Boucher, you're right. I think I told you. I found the Sports Illustrated by accident. I found the Sports Illustrated college preview. And not only did they pick Oregon, they had Boucher on the cover. So you have to wonder what they could do with Boucher. Having said that, this Jordan Bell, just like I said, May was the star for North Carolina. Jordan Bell was the star for Oregon against Kansas.
Absolutely.
11 points, 13 rebounds, 8 blocks. He was unbelievable. So now they've got three guys. They could have four, but again, no Boucher. So, yeah, do I think they can win? Absolutely. But after going against the chalk for virtually the whole tournament, I'm going North Carolina Gonzaga to win and play in the championship game next Monday.
And since it's Monday, I got to get your prediction on who wins that game.
I'm going to go North Carolina in the final. Again, not the biggest Roy Williams fan, not the biggest Carolina fan. Thought they were fortunate to win that game, but they won that game, so I give them credit. Had Kentucky beat them, I would pick Kentucky to beat Gonzaga. So I'm going to go with North Carolina because they did withstand and they did a good job shutting down Fox and Malik Monk. And again, he hit those two huge threes, but they were, you know, as good as Fox is, he was not good because Pinson was a little bigger, a little stronger, a little better defender. And while he was blown by Lonzo Ball like he was standing still in the prior game, he had trouble getting to the rim. I thought he got mauled a few times, but now I'm looking at it from I Want Kentucky to Win. I thought Fox got mauled a couple of times going to the basket, and for some reason they didn't get a call. I think there is an anti-Calipari thing in general. But I think with all of that, they still should have won that game. So I give North Carolina a lot of credit for winning, and that as much as anything is why I'm going to pick them to beat Oregon. Although you're right, Oregon destroyed Kansas. I thought it was going to happen a little earlier, actually, but whatever. I'm not a Bill Self guy. Just so you know, and you probably know these numbers, in 9 Elite Eight games in Bill Self's career, 2-7, at Kansas in Elite Eight games, he's 2-5. So, again, you kind of know it's coming. He's fortunate to have won one. I agree with you. How he's in the Hall of Fame is beyond me. But you just know it's going to happen. You just have to pick when.
Exactly. Sounds like the Andy Reid of college basketball. But
except he did win one. He did win one.
Yeah, that's true. Andy Reid.
He's one up on
Andy. Done that, and probably won't as long as Tom Brady's in the league. So I thought I'd
take
a gratuitous
shot. That's 6 or 7 more years, right?
Isn't that
6 or 7 more years?
Yeah. He wants to play till he's 50. And you know what? I haven't seen him take a step back yet, so I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised with his diet and his dedication. But, you know, we shall see. For what it's worth, I'm going with an all-Carolina final. I like South Carolina to advance over the Zags, even though I had Villanova and North Carolina in the final. Obviously, Villanova, it seems like they've been out for 3 weeks. I'm going with Carolina to win it. I'm not a big Roy Williams fan, but I think they are big. Didn't necessarily get it done last year against Nova, and Carolina plays good defense. I just think they come up a buck short against Carolina, very talented team, and huge inside. So I'm going North Carolina over South Carolina in the title game. Now, let's get to one of my favorite subjects of all time, and I know you wanted to talk about it, and I can't get enough of it. 25 years ago was the anniversary. Well, it is the anniversary. 25 years ago, Christian Laettner hit the shot. The shot. And I know people might want to say Chris Jenkins. That's fine. As much as I'm a Villanova fan, and I've said this on the air before, Laettner still holds the crown because it was a one-point game. And, you know, he misses, they're done. He makes it, they move on. It wasn't, you know, if Chris Jenkins misses, they go to overtime.
Yeah, it's overtime. I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah, and it was, there were the incumbent champs, and not only that, but Laettner, before that, was 9-for-9 from the field, 10-for-10 from the line.
Yep.
The fact that they got an 82-foot pass inbound, how Kentucky did not front him, where Pelfrey and that other cat were standing behind him. They were so afraid to foul him, they did nothing on him. And to not put a body in front to steal that pass, I don't get it. But Laettner, and I was at that game, and I've never seen anything like it, and probably won't ever see anything like it again. But your thoughts on Christian Laettner, one of the most clutch players of all time in NCAA history, and your thoughts and memories of that moment.
Well, I agree with you. If you played at any level and were in any games, you knew it was a lot easier to take a shot when it's tied than when you're down one, when you're taking the final shot. Obviously, I don't think people distinguish that enough, but they should, because it's a totally different. What you said, if Jenkins misses last year, whatever happens in overtime. I have a bunch of thoughts. First of all, Patino got correctly slaughtered for not putting someone on the ball. And that was a big issue after the game, you recall, and Patino defended it, and you had like the Dick Vitales of the world defending, because you can't criticize a coach. But I always said, even back then, if Patino is ever in that situation again in his career, I'll bet you $1 million that he's going to have a guy on the ball. Second, you're right. If you're going to have anybody, if you're going to cheat two guys to Christian Laettner, then have one in front and one behind. I totally agree with you. You know, I saw let me just say this first. Still to this day, I'm unclear how you can catch a pass from 80 feet away, dribble one way, pick up the ball, totally turn around, elevate for a jump shot over two big guys who, admittedly, you're right, didn't want to foul, and have the ball go off your hand in 2.1 seconds. I would love to see that in modern-day super slow motion. As you know, back then, they didn't have the red around the backboard go on, so we couldn't tell. I did stop it because I've seen it a couple times in the last day or two. I did stop it, and the ball was out of his hand before the clock did go to zero, but You don't know when the clock started. And I'll say it again. To do one catch, two dribble, three turn all the way around, four elevate, five shoot, in 2.1 seconds or less, very unlikely, but it's the old we'll never know. I did see, and the other question is, and you'll recall this if you were there, the other question is, why was Christian Laettner even in the game? He stomped that guy,
not
Timberlake, who was on the floor. Yeah. And I saw an interesting but weird interview today with Jamal Mashburn, who, of course, was on that team. He had just fouled out.
And he was laughing, right?
Yeah, well, he's a New York City kid, went to Cardinal Hayes High School, was an unbelievable player in high school as well. But it was weird because he was saying today, oh, I love Amino Timberlake. I haven't spoken to him in a while, which says to me he probably hasn't spoken to him in 25 years. But he didn't say that. He said, I haven't spoken to him in a long time or something. But here's what he said, and this is a quote. Quote, if he stepped on anybody else's chest at that particular time, there would have been a different reaction from some of the upperclassmen. They probably would have went after Laettner. And then he kind of trashed the Timberlake kid, said he was only a freshman. He didn't understand the moment. He didn't understand his role. He didn't have a great toughness, and all he did was clap. But hold it now. If you're a player, now Mashburn, in his defense, wasn't on the court. If you're a player, I don't care what game you're in, and a guy steps on the chest of a guy on your team, you don't get in his face? I'm not saying go over and push him and get a T, but you don't get in his face and go, what the hell are you doing? Nobody did anything. So here's Mashburn 25 years later essentially saying, oh, yeah, he was a wimp, but if it was me, and he even named Richie Farmer and Pelfrey, oh, if it was one of us, it would have been different. Well, what was going to be different? If you stand up and cold cock him, you lose. You're out of the game. If you stand up and get in his face, why not get in his face for a teammate? I thought that was just, and that was today. I thought that was just bizarre. But in any event, I watched this game. I didn't think, I thought it was longer than 2.1 seconds. They showed the replay five times. It showed he got it off before zero, but that's not the issue. I thought he should have been ejected. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that. Maybe Grayson Allen this year, but I don't think I've ever seen that. At a minimum, it should have been, I don't even remember if they had flagrants back then. They probably didn't, but it certainly was grounds to kick him out of the game. And, you know, that was Patino against Coach K. It was a fantastic game, but I thought it was weird on those two levels. Was it really 2.1 seconds? Maybe some super technical guy with a super stopwatch could figure it out now. But nobody's ever focused on when the clock started. They only focused on when the clock went to zero. And again, I thought at the time when I was watching it right after the game, I didn't really care who won. Not a Coach K guy. He's a great coach. Not a Patino guy. He's a great coach. But he shouldn't even been in the game at that point.
Yeah, I thought that was certainly interesting. Now, let me ask you something. You mentioned the no call on the walk a little while ago in the South Carolina game. You're mentioning a non-call necessarily on Laettner, although it was a technical and it did cost the team a little bit. But do you think refs choke? Do you think refs choke in games? I mean, they are human. I mean, in play we see players choke. Do you think they choke or they become tentative to make game-changing decisions?
I don't know if it's choke more than swallow the whistle. I think certainly you can find games at all levels, including the NBA, where the home team has the advantage because the refs either consciously or unconsciously will make a call on behalf of the home team if it's a bang-bang close, you know, block charge, whatever.
Sure.
I think generally speaking, you could analyze this and you would probably come up with home teams get more calls. In the tournament, it's a little different, but I don't know if that might then go to high seeds. I mean, again, to miss a four-step walk, not a close call, not an I'm not sure. You know, these guys shuffle their feet in the pivot, and I can't even tell that they walked, and these guys are calling walks all night on the big guys down low.
Right.
And then here's the guy who catches the ball and literally takes four steps, maybe five, I counted four, and what, nobody saw it? It's almost a feel thing. How do you get from point A to point B after catching an 85-foot pass? How do you get from there to there without taking four steps? And this was not to go up to get a dunk. Sometimes these guys let dunks go, especially in the NBA. This was to, as you said, haul in the pass, and he looked like a wide receiver. So Do I think they swallow the whistle sometimes? Yes, you know, the old let the players decide it. Do I think they're influenced by home court advantage sometimes? Absolutely, and I think that goes for the NBA, the NBA as well. You know, I don't think there's any ill intent. I think there has to be some, you know, you could probably get some psychiatrist to do a psychological study of reffing games before the home crowd or reffing games where it's the number one seed against the number eight seed, for example.
Yep.
I think there is something there. Hey, look, everybody's infallible. Refs make mistakes. It is an argument, though, for to have some kind of replay in all sports, whether we like it or not. We have it in sports already. I just saw another hockey game the other day where a guy scored what should have been the winning goal, but because the puck was in the zone for 43 seconds, but because the guy was offside 43 seconds ago, the goal is disallowed. That is unlike anything in football. You know, football
never
at this play
like
right
that.
Now, bang, bang. And on the one hand, I say that's good, but on the other hand, that's such a picayune, and it's happened a number of times this year. And now you actually have guys who their job on the bench is to just look at the offsides, or they seat guys over the blue lines, so you can tell.
Yes.
You know, and then you can radio down to whoever and say, yeah, challenge
sure.
that one. Having said all that, I think when it's obvious like this, or the guy who went up through the rim and blocked that shot, remember we had that earlier in the tournament?
Northwestern.
These should be, and again, I criticize Chris Collins and still do because he's the grown-up now. He's not the player. And he should
right.
have never run on the court, even though he was 100% right. You know, after the game he talked about, I'm an emotional guy. No, no, you're the coach. But
right.
that should have been a review. That should have been a reviewable play because that's A, blatant, and B, a huge play in a big tournament game.
Huge play. You brought up the timeout game, Chris Webber game. I happened to be at that game. I went to a random Final Four and happened to be at that game.
Wow.
Before that timeout, he got the ball and was looking for Jalen Rose, who didn't get back, who was the point guard. He walked. I mean, it was a clear walk. Webber
yes.
walked. And you could hear the crowd go nuts, and the ref
yes.
swallowed the whistle. And then, you know, it evened out when Webber got down the court and called the timeout. But, I mean, that's one of those plays, like, really? I mean,
yeah, that was a definite walk. You're right. I forgot about that.
I was rooting for Michigan, too, but Donald William hit like 9 3-pointers down the stretch. It seemed like he did. And, you know, the Fab Five didn't quite get over the hump. I'll just tell you a couple little quick anecdotes, my thoughts on that game. One, I was working at Prism at the time. Two passes come along, and no one wanted them. It was for working media. We weren't really working. We don't cover NCAA, but we had an office in the bowels of the Spectrum. We just had to walk down a few feet. I got to see the open practice, and Duke just had this aura. When they came out, you were almost like in awe. Bobby Hurley and Christian Laettner and Tom
right.
Hill, and of course the legendary coach. It was weird, but it was cool. And you know, his brother Danny Hurley was in that regional tournament too. He played for Seton Hall. UMass was the other team. John Calipari. That was cool. I couldn't find someone to go with me. It was unbelievable. I'm calling everyone from Prism, and everyone's like, nah, I'm busy. I called my friends. We're going to that party. Come see us after the – okay, I guess. And my friend Paul Jolovitz, he's a sports talk host at WIP. He's like Rain Man as it pertains
uh-huh.
to sports. He goes to everything he can, and it's like, you know what? It's a date night with my wife. I still don't let him ever live that down. I mention that every time I see him. He doesn't go. I finally get another buddy of mine go, and you saw what happened. And you know, we were on the court afterwards. I got to shake Leitner's hand, congratulated
wow.
him. He was in awe. He was like, thanks. And, you know, I told him. But then we go in the locker room. This is a story I like. And they were sitting around. They looked exhausted. Duke looked exhausted. They were spent. And Coach K, and we were looking at the stat sheet, me and a friend of mine, you know, 10 for 10 from the field, 10 for 10 from the line.
Right.
Coach K walks by. And I stopped him real quick. I was a young kid. I guess I had more Cayunes back then. I say, hey, Coach. And I showed him the stat sheet. And he stopped and he looked. I said, you ever see anyone with a better game like this? He, without missing a beat, he goes, his defense was a little soft. And he kept walking.
Oh, boy.
Nice coach. He was obviously kidding, but it was just a wild, wild experience. And, again, I couldn't get anyone to go with me. Now, I mention it every time I see these guys. Hey, remember that Kentucky game? That was pretty cool. You know, we were right on the floor, too. But
yeah,
anyway, we're here.
The
Cal Smart, Joe Staza.
The only game. The only game I could think of similar in terms of production like that, but it wasn't a close game, was Walton in one of those final games.
Yes.
When didn't he go 22-for-23 against Memphis?
Yes.
With Larry Keenan.
That's pretty good.
But he did miss a shot. But it was also a blowout. It wasn't that kind of game to make a shot at the end. I do think the context of great shots and great players has to come on. You know, and some people say, oh, it was only an Elite Eight game. But this was
Doesn't
Duke
matter.
Kentucky, and Duke went on to win the whole thing, by the way, so you know Kentucky was thinking they could have won it as well. But that's
sure.
the only thing that pops up. I'm sure there are other games where guys went perfect, but not in such big spots. I've always said the greatest catch in the history of baseball is Swoboda laying out in the 69 World Series, because the Willie Mays catch was in, like, the first inning of the game in 54. And Swoboda, who was not even a good fielder, and they did score a run on the play, but that, I thought, was just another nail in the coffin of the Orioles in the most improbable, one of the most, if not
sure.
the most improbable World Series victory in the history of the world. I always tell people in New York, you know, that year you had the Jets winning the Super Bowl, beating the Colts. You had the Mets winning the World Series. You had the Knicks 69-70 winning the championship, which was, you know, not a shock. But you also had man landing on the moon. And I say to everyone, well, the Mets winning the World Series was weirder than man landing on the moon, because Kennedy early in the 60s, right, when he became president, he said, we're going to land a man on the moon before the end of the decade. And if you
yep.
said that for the Mets in 62, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8, that the Mets are going to win the World Series, they would have committed you to a mental institution. So I think what I'm saying is things, when they happen, the context in which they happen, I think that's what you have to look at if you're going to talk about the greatest whatever of all time.
No, I agree. What are your thoughts on the greatest? You mentioned the 69 Mets. There have been teams that have kind of come out of nowhere, turned it around, worst to first, and things like that. Great upsets, teams that go 6-0 in the tournament, things like that. An 8 seed winning the whole thing in hockey,
yep.
the Kings a few years ago. What do you think
yep.
is the best or most unlikely, improbable run that resulted in a championship in all of the majors? Would it
I
be
would
that
still,
69 Mets?
Would I would
be,
still
no,
say
no,
the
would
69
NC
Mets.
NC State?
Could be NC State. You know, I saw a list. People were picking their top five, like, greatest finishes of all time. And
yes.
I thought you had to put NC State as first, because that was so shocking
that was
to beat Phi Slammajama. If I had
yeah,
to pick
right?
one in the history of all the sports, I think I would still pick the 69 Mets. And don't forget, that was the first year that they had playoffs where the Mets had to beat the Braves and Hank Aaron. So people forget that as well. But it was shocking. It was not shocking once they got there. It was shocking that they beat the unbeatable Orioles in five games. But I think improbable, because they were terrible in 68. That's what, you know, they
yes,
had a good
terrible.
Year of pitching, but they were terrible in 68 and were abysmal. You know, I tell people, my father, who, you know, was a Yankee minor league catcher before World War II and used to tell me about the 40s and the 50s and how great it was to have three teams. When the Mets came back in the late 60s, he said, you know, this is great, but it'll never be like the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Yankees. So I do think, because nobody thought the Mets – in the early 60s, nobody went to see the Mets play. They all went to see the National League teams play, especially the Dodgers and the Giants, because there were still Dodgers and Giants diehards from just 3, 4, 5 years before. So it's interesting the way that happened. That would be my pick, but I'm a New Yorker.
No, that's
might be
okay. Hey, listen, I'm a Villanova guy, and I'm not going to go Villanova here. We only have about 2 minutes left, Stephen. Of all the upsets, NC State was phenomenal. You know, you got the Texas Western Miners of 66, and you have so many. You have the 69 Mets, like you say. I'm still going with USA over Russia in 1980 in Lake Placid. I still got to go there. And
you might be right. Yeah.
Here's the problem I have with that game. Eruzioni is the hero forever, right? I mean, it's all Eruzioni all the time. I know in Italian it means eruption and all that good stuff. He scores the game winner, comes off the bench, bad clearing pass. He gets a nice pass and just kind of risks one. And Tretiak was replaced after the first period. Here's the thing. Mark Johnson owned that game. Mark Johnson you ask 10 people on the street who Mark Johnson, who?
Right.
I don't know.
I don't
you
even
ask
know
them
who
Mike Ruzioni. Oh, that guy who scored the goal. Mark Johnson scored the goal with no time left at the end of the first period when Tretiak didn't control the rebound, and he scored to tie the game in the third period. He went on to a decent career. I think he was with the Devils. I'm not sure. I know the Broughtons were, or one of them was. But again, and Jim Craig, you know, they got outshot 16-2, I think, in the second period. He held them in there. It was just phenomenal. I was in eighth grade.
As,
I know the game was tape delayed. The word was leaking somehow, but you know, of course we didn't have the internet and all that kind of good stuff. But I still have to go with that team. I still get chills every time I watch it. I still, you know, have to leave the room as I get a little misty watching those guys get that thing done at HBO special
well,
a few years ago.
Well, as often happens, you still have to have an idiot.
We only have about
Russia.
20 seconds.
Yeah, you have to have an idiot coach on Russia take out probably at the time the greatest goalie in the world. So that has to help as well.
It was unbelievable.
But you're right.
That was a huge, huge mistake. Hey, Steven, great job again, my friend. We'll be back next Tuesday night. I know we went heavy on NCAA, but we had to get it done. Enjoy the Final Four, my friend. Joe Stasek and Steve Kallas. We're out till next week, 5:30. So long, everybody.